update on the Klamath River watershed stewardship activities from Mr. Clean Baker. Chairman Warren, fellow board members, thank you for having me here today. Clayton Craver, senior scientist with your staff. I have Patty standing by because the proper protocol, this is going to be referenced later in the presentation. This is the long-awaited report on large-scale water quality improvement projects in the Upper Klamath Basin. I urge you to take some time while I'm talking today to look at this document. It's an absolutely beautiful document. It's going to be enormously useful in our implementation program. And it was put together by a couple of artists whose work is going to make that technical issues much more broadly understood. And I really appreciate all the work that our contractors, Stillwater, Tetra Tech, Eli Asari, and Jay Kahn, and others put into it. They did some tremendous work on this product. And it's something that you asked me to come back and speak to you about as a Klamath update item. So I hope you have some time today. I wanted to have more copies, but I kept giving them away along the journey this week, and I barely survived with one. So thank you.
Forest Service waiver program,
And they're doing tremendous work in many of the sub-basins, decommissioning roads, resurfacing roads, rebuilding roads, redoing culverts. And it's just a part of the program that's essential to putting this ecosystem back together, but it's more than we can speak to today. So have it be said that there is a lot of work that's not mentioned in this presentation today. I just wanted to kind of go over the watershed stewardship approach. There's still a lot of questions about it as a conceptual model that has some tremendous potential for benefits on the ground. What do we get out of it? What is it not? And so I'm going to build it ring by ring here for you and try to speak to some of the questions that came up earlier today. So the first aspect of it is we had Charlotte Ambrose come from NOAA NIMS a couple months ago and give you all a presentation and say, why can't we all work better together? We all seem to have the same outcomes in mind. We all seem to use the same tools, the same practices, and try to promote that. Well, one of it is that there is no central forum. And we've heard today from RCDs and other nonprofits, Klamath Watershed Partnership up in the Upper Klamath Basin, we can have local lead entities serve as a coordination forum for state and federal agencies to form partnerships. And so that first step in this process is recognizing those common areas of overlap and starting to build on those. And the next step in that is it's a scientifically based process, setting priorities on a priority basis. And you have to characterize and know your watershed. And sharing information is a key component of that.
Oh, you're done.
That was fast. I told someone in 20 minutes, but I don't know what happened. There got stuck, I guess. Anyway, I'll continue on. We heard that many of the issues that come up, Jonathan mentioned working on streams. On Tuesday, I was speaking to a group called the Upper Klamath Conservation Action Network, UCAN. And in the past, they had always been a fisheries and habitat, meaning large woody debris, gravel operation, focused really on restoring fisheries. And what they've realized is that one of the limiting factors is water quality. And they've become a partner in the OWEB, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, a special investment partnership. They're going to receive a lot of funding through that program. And they have reoriented their program, and they invited us, the Water Quality Agency, to come and participate in a workshop to set priorities for the Upper Klamath Basin. They're very interested in this document that we just produced. Many of them participated in our workshop and began to understand better through that workshop the linkage between water quality and fisheries. We have a very common, most sensitive beneficial use and a very key concern about water quality, which seems to be limiting and impacting that beneficial use. And I want to read to you their meeting objective. A refresher on the status and limiting factors for endangered and sensitive species. Restoration effectiveness and water quality monitoring. The role of diffuse source treatment wetlands, which is one of the projects talked about in that document, may play in reducing external loading of phosphorus and spray post-project evaluations. So for the first time, this group has reached out to us because of this activity of reaching out and building partnerships through the Klamath Watershed Partnership, which is a recipient of our 319H grant. And I honestly think that would not have happened without the watershed stewardship approach. We heard today about the idea of permit coordination. This fourth step here called implementation, it's meant to, you'll see in that document that a lot of those projects would cost up to $10 million or more. No one agency has that resources. So in this implementation step, we need an explicit way of combining our funding. We also need an explicit way to coordinate our permit requirements so that we can make these things happen more expeditiously. And so that doesn't just happen, it could happen randomly, But we could make it happen faster, more efficiently, and better for all if we actually coordinate on it. So that's the other purpose of that next step. And then, of course, it's an adaptive management component. And so we're building monitoring programs, and we have an explicit step for updating and evaluating. The Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program allows us to make estimates of diffuse source treatment systems. What do we expect the phosphorus reduction to be? How are we making progress towards TMDL goals? And our monitoring program allows us to actually measure that. We're going to be held accountable for the public funding that we're spending to determine whether or not we're making progress towards water quality goals. So in building those partnerships, we have been continued the development of the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program and the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program. And where we're at on that is the 319H grant funds are going to allow us to support the Klamath Watershed Partnership to begin registering projects. And but what we mean by registering projects in the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program is actually making estimates of what those project benefits will be. And, for example, we're working with the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust as part of that project. And there are projects that have dual benefits, including increased water flows to both the refuges and to the river. And Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust has projects where they're working with individual ranchers, and they have been demonstrating with alfalfa that you can reduce the use of water on alfalfa crops, but from 9 applications in the summer to 2, and have the same yield. And so they did that by paying ranchers as an incentive in case of loss of revenue from loss of crop to apply the experimental water application. And so in addition to that, they also reduce nutrient runoffs from the property into the Spray River. So we're benefiting by that partnership through this framework, both in terms of increasing flows, which is a key part of the Klamath's ecosystem restoration, and in terms of nutrient delivery to the Klamath River. So we're collaborating in that manner for that. So these are, there's some other parts up there. We also have the Shasta RCD 319H, and that is for implementing the Klamath Tracking and Accounting Program and the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program at the southern end of our pilot range, which is the Shasta Valley right now. Then I wanted to give you a brief update on the activities related to the KHSA, because we're still benefiting from the expenditure of minimum measure funds, and there has been some changes there in terms of the abeyance which held the 401 certification in check. That has been lifted. There was no request on the part of the parties, and so as of July, the process of reinitiating the 401 certification for the FERC decision has started again. I just want to say that this process has resulted in an increased level of coordination between the regional board and the state water board. We were having weekly conference calls which involved our council related to how they were going to approach and resolve the issue of whether to continue with the abeyance or let the abeyance lapse. And it became a moot point because there never became a request from the parties to continue the abeyance. But what that means is that there'll be updating, there'll be a calendar of events that'll be proposed, and as of no later than August next year, the 401 certification process will begin once again. In the meantime, Senator Wyden, there were some Senate hearings on the KHSA, and Senator Wyden directed the parties to form a task force to reduce the cost of the KDRA, and they've done that from $500 million to $450 million, to come up with drought protection for those who were not covered under the previous agreement. And drought protection doesn't mean increased levels of water, it means insurance for those who may lose water late in the season, if necessary, to protect fish flow. So there's been some negotiations there. We haven't been participating in that. I only know really what the general public knows from press reports on that. So I can't really fill you in much more than that. I didn't know if you been following that. You kind of had to look for it in the papers to see any progress on that. So I just wanted to emphasize, too, just a couple points here, that I've been sitting in on the stakeholder meetings with the Ag Discharge Lands Program and talking with staff and figuring out ways that the stewardship approach and the Klamath Basin can both help and enhance their approach there and to be consistent with the approach that they have. We have participants in our process on both sides of the border, and so we're trying to make sure that the the requirements of the Ag Discharge Program, that they're applied consistently, that there's consistency in application of the requirements across the border. And that's where we've gotten some good participation from folks in Oregon willing to agree and discuss consistency of those requirements. So, I had mentioned some of those other things. I just passed out the report to you. I just want to I'm going to very briefly cover one of the technologies just to kind of show you the scope of how each technology was addressed. I mentioned a few sort of treatment systems, treatment wetlands restoration, sediment sequestration, algal biomass harvesting, sediment dredging, and then network design. And the one I'm going to cover in more detail here is this is the fused source treatment systems, and what it needs essentially is the distribution of small treatment wetlands throughout a watershed from 0 to 10 acres, because by using that small size and replicating it many times, you can achieve a greater efficiency of removal than one single treatment wetland. You avoid water rights issues, and they are lower maintenance, lower initial cost, lower design, and they can be built right into an existing operation and still have a beneficial effect on water quality and water quantity. So this is just a diagram that illustrates what they call a flow-through creekside system and a terminal flow-through system. And the document is full of these kinds of simple diagrams that explain in great detail how these systems work and how they are constructed. So you've heard, just a take-home point about this document. You know, I've been walking around saying, I can build you a house. What this document does now is gives me plans that can say, I can build you a house that looks like this at this location for this amount. And that makes a much more easier argument for me to go find additional funding for some of these projects. It's a huge step forward in that process. So included in the document is project design and evaluation criteria, so cost of removal per dollar, all kinds of metrics by which you can evaluate the feasibility of these individual projects. And I'm not going to go into each one of these individual tables. But the information is presented very clearly and very succinctly so that you can evaluate these projects even if you're a non-technical, non-professional person. And that's what it's intended for, is for use within the basin to build support and understanding for these fairly innovative projects. It gives you projects cost planning and cost estimate timelines. And I feel pretty solid about these, and some of them were much less than we had anticipated. In particular, the pilot design for the diffuse source treatment system. This is for 4 to 7, I think, such systems applied in 1 acre for the Sprague River system. And the document evaluated not specific parcels, but on an aggregate, estimated the feasibility of application of this within the Sprague River and found more than adequate acreage for reducing the nutrient input to Upper Klamath Lake by 20%, which is half of the total that was asked for in the Upper Klamath Lake TMDL, 2000 TMDL. And USGS has come up with new equilibrium estimates for Upper Klamath Lake, and the TMDL is somewhat below what the USGS estimates are, but the beauty of having USGS critique our TMDL is people can see that the difference between the TMDL equilibrium point and GS equilibrium point is maybe 20 to 25 micrograms per liter, whereas the difference between USGS and current conditions is over 150 micrograms per liter. So the uncertainty has shifted away from, do you have the right targets, to, oh my God, we have a long ways to go and we better get started. And so it's that kind of critical review has actually been very helpful to bringing the focus on phosphorus, like with the Upper Klamath Conservation Action Network. There's much less uncertainty about the TNBL targets now than previously. This last slide doesn't speak specifically to diffuse source treatment systems, but I can't leave this document without showing you that it doesn't focus on any one project, because it's going to take a number of projects to bring this ecosystem back into some level of equilibrium. And so you can see here that we have rehabilitated wetlands, which is the larger scale wetlands, there's still a role for 1,000-acre projects and key locations within the lake to help with sucker habitat and with nutrient management. And then there's sediment sequestration, which is more of a hard engineering approach, and it's more of a, addresses more of a symptom, but it's a symptom that needs to be addressed. It's from the legacy issue that I've talked to you about before, the sediments that came in from historical logging practices and, you know, previous times that causes the recycling of nutrients within the lake. And then diffuse source treatment systems in the wood, and then targeted dredging within Upper Klamath Lake and Agency Lake. We now have a map of the key locations within the lake where concentrations are the highest. And because we have that map and we know the depth, we could now more specifically estimate the cost, and it's more reasonable than was previously done when estimates were based on a lake-wide estimate. So these are just kind of some of the information and how it could be used out of the document. So what's our next step? I've already taken that, some of this. Speaking to UCAN, trying to take advantage of some of the special investment partnership funding, and then USBR, talking to them about which of these projects they can help potentially fund. And then in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to the California Coastal Conservancy, who helped pay for this document, $100,000 for this document. They still have a prop of 50 grant money left, and they want to go out with a splash, and they are very committed to funding, helping match funds with, if we can find another partner for them to match funds on some of these projects. And then Natural Resources Conservation Service has approached us about wanting to work in partnership on not only on BMP implementation and water management, but also in helping to provide technical expertise and matching funding for some of these projects in the Upper Basin. So we're making headway, nothing firm yet, but there are people who are interested in helping out. I believe I've covered some of this. I do want to note one thing from this slide, that USBR has already provided $50,000. You've heard me talk about the adaptive management system, and that we have the components KTAP and KBOMP. Right now, they can't talk to each other. There's no way to translate information from the Klamath Tracking and Canning Program to the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program. And a third component, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which has very detailed information about projects. USBR has paid us, paid the Klamath Watershed Partnership $50,000 to build what we're calling a decision management framework, so that we can evaluate when we say that a project is estimated to reduce this amount of phosphorus from, you know, the spray, how does that translate to a concentration difference? And are we seeing that in the monitoring program database? And I can use that as an example because we are seeing progress towards concentration declines in the spray because of projects, but we've never documented what projects have been done. And that's what we're doing in that pilot phase, is actually accounting for how many projects have been done, and can we actually correlate that reduction to the reductions in concentration that we're seeing incoming to the Upper Klamath Lake. The Klamath Basin Monitoring Program, just one thing I want to note here is that we're growing up. We've been kind of an ad hoc organization. We're not a 501(c). We've actually been an organization that has three or four or five different fiscal agents that handle grants for us. And we're making the decision to turn to the San Francisco Estuary Institute Aquatic Sciences Center to become kind of our exclusive fiscal agent for grants, to simplify our administration, to take advantage of the amazing amount of expertise and knowledge they have about administering and running, and having technical expertise of staff support to support regional monitoring programs. I do want to note that it's a very specific point that the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program Steering Committee will be the primary directing force for Klamath Basin Monitoring Program. San Francisco Estuary Institute, that is their relationship also with the regional monitoring program. They do not direct the monitoring program. The direction of the monitoring program will come from members that are members of the steering committee of the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program. So if you hear about this change through others that we're going to them as a fiscal agent, that's what they are. They're helping us administratively. They're not helping us direct the program. It's still within Basin. I think I've already updated you on all that. Yesterday, I met with the Bureau of Reclamation. They're very interested in picking up where we left off in terms of our management agency agreement. Tule Lake Irrigation District wants to be a part of those discussions, and that's part of what we're going to be needing to coordinate with the ag discharge program, because some of the agreements and requirements that we'll be negotiating through the stewardship agreement, we'll want to make sure that they're consistent with what is being done and is transparent to the stakeholders in that process. So I think that brings us. Oh, and then I mentioned to you that we're establishing a stewardship framework and a stewardship report for Shasta, and we're going to report on that. And basically, we're documenting by reach water quality conditions, stewardship projects that have been completed, and priorities for the future. And that's something we'll be reporting on in more detail next month. And with that, if there's any questions or comments about what I've been doing with my time.
Well, for one thing, thank you very much. It's always so fascinating with all the things going on in here. It's just quite amazing. I kind of call you the wizard, the wizard of Oz. You have all these stuff, levers going on, things happening.
Well, I'm doing the reporting for a lot of people that are pulling them out.
Yeah, you are. And we see you. You're the one guy we see here on a regular basis telling us what's going on, and it's quite extraordinary. Thank you for showing this. You probably have a hard time getting back.
I can kind of work in front of this.
Shit. Comment your question.
Only that I want a copy of that.
I will see what I can do. It's also available electronically, and it came out last week, and it's available for free, but you don't get that format is so amazing, and it works really well. But I'm going to be sending out to everybody who participated at the workshop and other listservs, there's a download site that Stillwater is maintaining for us. It's a free download, but it's a huge, as you might imagine, it's like 150 meg or more than that. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
If you happen to find the URL for that, could you? Can you forward that to?
I will, but I would like to. You guys were so supportive of that. I would like to get the more of those documents for everybody as well.
Quaid, do we hear more about the Shasta work through? We have an update coming, I know, in the future with on Shasta and SkyTM deal. Are you part of that? Do you know? Does that kind of?
Oh, yeah.
No.
It's been an interesting ride. We chose, or actually Shasta self-nominated as the first watershed stewardship pilot. And the pilot meaning Shasta Watershed Stewardship Report, which is a wiki-based, web-based, to be transparent with all of those steps that we're talking about, partnerships, watershed characterization, identification of water quality assessment, reporting on stewardship projects. There was a lot of information there. It just wasn't very well organized. So it's been a huge task relative. And you cannot develop a monitoring plan until you know what information is already collected, where the information gaps are, and what are the priorities for information you need to make management decisions. And so we've been working very closely with them to organize that information into a coherent format, meaning by reach. There's 25 years of water quality monitoring data that had never been assessed. And so it took us a long time to compile and format and quality assure data that has been collected by a wide variety of agencies, entities, individual stakeholders, and some of which we were not able to use. But Bob Clamp, a person you're all probably familiar with, our ex-CEO, and you know, has been involved in the area for a very long time. He's been volunteering for a single day each week. And he has taken the lead on, and now that we have all that water quality data organized, he's been taking the lead on the analysis. And so we hope to show you by reach changes over time, conditions over time, where the water quality priorities are. And we've been collaborating with Mark Hampton of NOAA NIMS, Bob Cook, Mark Cookson of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We've collaborated with the City of Wairika Stormwater Program. Bob Hawkins of Cal Fish and Wildlife. And so the analysis is not just about water quality, it's also about fisheries habitat issues, blockages, habitat needs. It's going to be a comprehensive stewardship assessment of the conditions by reach and what the priorities are, what stewardship projects have been done to mitigate those issues there, and then progress on identifying priorities for by reach, what else needs to be done. So that's what we have coming.
Okay, look forward to that.
And we'll be presenting, by the way, we'll be presenting to the Shasta RCD board and the Siskiyou County supervisors as well as you all, and anyone else who really cares to invite us to give a presentation on it.
Great. I'll say our hope and plan is to then do a comparable type of analysis of data and information in the Scott River watershed.
Great. Yeah, the CAPE, it's a CAPE directive, by the way, to create these watershed stewardship reports for every one of the sub-basins that I saw identified up there.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
And keep them maintained on the web.
Click on thank you.
You bet.
Which I have a card here, I believe it's yours, but it doesn't have your name on it. You didn't fill your name in, but I believe this is yours. Is that correct?
I get a card for this.
Yeah, okay. It just didn't have your name. You just
I'm sorry.
I put your name in here, so I recognize you.
Thanks.
You're right.
For the HJ case, on this, please get this right, I don't represent the Redwood chapter, I represent the North Group of the Redwood chapter of the Sierra Club on this particular issue, not the other one, but this one, and the Klamath Forest Alliance. Sorry for the confusion on that, but the Sierra Club is a big bureaucratic organization. I just want to make sure that all board members are aware that at the beginning of this process, Clayton and the organization issued an invitation to proposals, to submit proposals. I submitted a proposal based on a normative, near normative restoration in the Keenup area. But I was blackballed. I was blackballed from the conference. That public money was used on, and I've been blackballed from the process. We've been restoring the Klamath River Basin since the Klamath Act of 1986, and actually before that with Department of Fish and Game programs. We've invested hundreds of millions of dollars. I was one of the big promoters of the restoration economy at the national level with coastwide restoration initiatives in Congress and appropriations. I estimate we've spent about $25 million in Scott River on restoration. So we heard about our progress. Whether it is really progress or is actually regress or no progress, i.e. the status quo, depends. criteria. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the data says about the Shasta and the Scott last time. I was advocated for those proposals, and I hope we do see some real water quality data there. And I want to make a prediction. We're going to continue to make progress. The money will flow. There will be more glossy reports will be done. But water quality overall will not improve. Let me give you an example of marsh restoration. Except for the BLM's program on the lower Wood River, there is no sequestration going on in the rest in the marsh restoration around Upper Klamath Lake because of subsidence has made the land so low that what we have is water storage. And because the priority of the Bureau of Reclamation is water storage in order to meet its requirements, its obligations, including river flows, lake levels, and irrigation, and they want to maximize that, they're using it for storage. And in order to manage them so that they sequester the phosphorus, you have to keep them out. You can't use them for storage because the water's too deep. It just becomes more lake, more open water. And that's the problem we have. I have to say, based on my 30 years or so experience on the Klamath, that I don't see good prospects for that changing. We came kind of full circle today. The first presenter, your liaison, talked about regulatory incentives. First time I heard that term, regulatory incentives, and I ask you to think about it a little bit. Regulation is generally the stick part of things. You know, we regulate things, and that's a stick. There's no doubt about it. Incentives are generally carrots. I would submit to you that when we mix regulation and incentives together, that what we get is an inedible carrot cake. And I'm not really, you know, it's kind of a joke, but it's not really a joke. I think we're on dangerous ground when we do that, especially in terms of equity, because some people are well positioned to take advantage of those incentives, and other people aren't. Clayton, I want to give you just one more example, and then I'll stop. Clayton spoke about the Forest Service stormproofing and decommissioning, all the wonderful work that's going on upslope. I monitor all that work, especially on the Klamath National Forest and in the Klamath Basin generally, the California portions of it. The Forest Service is mostly decommissioning small spur roads that are high up in the watershed, that are off main roads, that have very low risk for the watershed. We're not decommissioning many, some, but not many, of the high-risk roads, including in our key sediment watersheds, the roads that will deliver sediment during these major storm events, like what we had in 97-05. And they are episodic. Most of the times, they're okay. And we even recommissioned roads on the Klamath National Forest, one of the worst roads in the Little North Fork drainage that's blown out about 5 times, and they recommissioned it. Past managers promised us that we'd never come back, and it did. The Forest Service doesn't have the money to maintain about 25% of the roads it has. It's going through transportation plans right now. And most of them are getting appealed by the environmental community because they don't bite the bullet and get to something. And, you know, there's no such thing really as stormproofing. You can reduce the risks. I think some of you know this very well because you have the expertise. But an unmaintained road is eventually going to fail. It's probably going to fail catastrophically. And we're not decommissioning the roads that when they do fail catastrophically because they're on these deep-seated earth flows are going to deliver massive, and had before, deliver massive amount of sediments to the streams. So I guess the Wizard of Oz, the Wizard of Oz analogy is very adept. And when we pull back this curtain, I think we see things that are very concerning. Thank you.
Thank you. Want your question? Thank you. Thank you, Clayton. We have one last agenda item.
Thanks, Clayton. Thank you, Clinton.
Which is a